Before we commence, let's take a moment to put our hands together to worship the Supreme One. The leader who set him free from the shackles of ignorance. The doctor who found the antidote to desire, aversion, delusion. The three poisons. The Supreme One, the Tathagata. By chanting the Namaskara. Three times, all together and with me.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
Day by day, I think something that I'm very fortunate to have, and so do you, is being surrounded by this noble association. I mean, if you are asked, what is the most valuable thing that you have? Now, I remember, you know, back, you know, a couple, maybe if you ask me about a couple years back, I would say, you know, my life is the most valuable thing I have. Actually, it's not. Our lives are just a part of a massive chain of noble association. The most valuable thing you own is your association, because that is your life. Your life is your association is your life. Now, you know, I want to really... Now, we talk about the value of noble associations. So I want to almost diverge from this, but more talk about, you know, how extremely fortunate we are, not just to be a noble association, but also to have the stories of such great individuals. Now, just last Thursday, for our monks and Anagarikas and Anagarikas, we had a program called... We called it, I think, Jetavansa. Right? Although, it sounds really weird, but that's what the program is called. And it talked about the history of the monastery. Now, it's very, very interesting to you know, see and be told the history of the monastery. And how, you know, it started, and how, where we are now. How we only started with 10 monks. Now we have over 200, or just around 200. Ordinary ceremony coming up in 2 weeks on the 16th. Right? And now, and then I think we'll be passing 200 maybe. 10 to 200. One small building, to, you know, many buildings. Although we've improved in those sort of aspects, our teachers, our association, remained pretty much the same. You see, although we are all different, for example, I wear a robe, most of you are wearing white, some of you have dedicated your entire life. Some of you dedicate part of your life to this asana. However, there's one thing that unites us all. Number one is our teachers. Number two is our aim to attain Nibbana. And that unity is what brings us further. That unity is what helps us to take, you know, the next step. I mean, you know, it's not a surprise that, you know, people talk about the unity among ourselves. Because, you know, how many people come to the monastery and say, you know, when I come to the monastery and I talk with these people, I feel really relaxed. Not just relaxed, I feel that, you know, these people are the nicest people in the world. So many people enter the doorway and the first thing they hear is what? Do you want to come sit down? What brings you along today? Do you have a sermon do you have a counseling session? Are you going to attend? Are you going to help with the Buddha Puja? The first two words, anyone, even ourselves, the moment I wake up, the moment some of you wake up, the moment you enter these gates, the first words you hear is what? Tiruvan Sanne. I remember, you know, if you were to count the number of times you hear these two words, forget a week, just a day. I remember once one of our monks, his teacher had given him before, as he wakes up, so he wakes up at 4, until he goes to the Nyaya, until the Nyaya starts at 4:30, to count the number of times he hears Tiruvan Sanne. And he comes up to me and says, "Dasan, you know, I was able to hear Tiruvan Sanne more than 30, I think if I remember correctly, it was like 37 times. So that relates to every minute, Tiruvan Sanne. The moment he wakes up to Tiruvan Sanne, are you going to go to the Nyaya today? To every single person he passes, Tiruvan Sanne, Tiruvan Sanne, Tiruvan Sanne. To the moment he sits down and, you know, he sits next to someone else, the next person says what? Tiruvan Sanne. I mean, this is what, you know, brings us together. Tiruvan Sanne. Meaning, we are taking the refuge of these three gems. That's what brings us all together, and that's what makes us so strong together. That's what keeps us together. That is the glue. The moment we are no longer Tiruvan, the moment we are Tiruvan Asaranai, now, you know, nature takes its place, and a key law of nature is nature wants to disperse. The minds are together, now disperse. So we are very fortunate, extremely fortunate. Now, that's not just this life. You know, even when you hear these lives of these great arahants, they are also, you know, stories that are things that we can use in our own lives. For example, I mean, the best example, the two of the greatest examples that I can give to you that you can use in your own life is, you know, normally when we're together, sometimes you get praised. Sometimes when you do something wrong, you get scolded. Right, you're told, don't do this, don't do that. Today, you're given a big responsibility. The next day, you can get those removed. And usually when these sort of things happen back outside these gates, what do we feel? They're taking away my responsibilities. This is something that I used to do. But then once you look back at these stories of these great arahants, sometimes you think and you realize that, you know, these arahat nuances, they went through so much compared to me. Because if you think you're unlucky, if you think that you know, everything is taken away from you, nothing good ever happens, well, just look back at the life of Lokatasissa Maharat Nansa. If you think you're being blamed a lot, look back at Lakundabad Maharajan. I mean, these stories are really powerful in the way that none of us can ever be as unlucky. None of us can ever be as told off. Like, whenever you think, you know, today my life is horrible. You know, today I wasn't able to do this, I wasn't able to do that. This person did this, this person did that. Just remember these stories. Take the stories and put them inside it. Follow in their footsteps. I mean, just if I was to tell you just one of these stories, you know, Lokatesa Maharatan Mahanse. Now we all know he was one of the most unluckiest because in his entire life he's never had a full meal. Now that's just the top of the story, isn't it? In these books, they can't tell you everything. But you could imagine the other stories. So he in his life, he's never had a full meal. Every time he had something, it was probably very small, or you know, it's gone off, or not able to have a full meal. Now, and because of that, if he went on Pindapatha, if he went begging for alms, he would receive nothing. If there was anyone with him going for alms, they will also receive what? Nothing. Just imagine, right? You're going for alms, right? And you're told that you're going with Lokatesa Maharatan Mahanse. Regardless, he became an arahant afterwards. At the last moment. But before that, what would you have done? Lokatesa Hamru. Munase? Can I not go with someone else? People would be talking. People would whisper. You know how it feels when you know that someone's talking about you, but you know that the moment you turn around, they're going to stop. He probably had that. People were saying, "Are you, not with him? Anyone but him." And remember, at this point, he was still what? Not another one. He still had, ignorance and attachment. Therefore, he probably went to his teacher, Sariputta Maharatnazi, and said, "Abhyandru, these people are saying this. Whenever I go on for alms, they're always, trying to, escape from it. They leave me behind. Sometimes we go halfway and I turn back and they all disappeared. Leave me stranded in the middle of nowhere." I mean, these are probably things that have happened. And every time it happened, he probably went every single day to his teacher saying, "This happened today." And what did Sariputta Maharatnazi do? "Let me go talk to his monks." Understand your mind. It's ignorance that gives rise to dukkha. And in the beginning, you can imagine you are hungry and someone says, "It's ignorance that gives rise to dukkha." What would you do? Ignorance? Ignorance? Please just give me something to eat. I'm hungry. Sometimes you go to your teachers, and it's a very common thing. You go to your teachers with a problem. You go to a teacher, this happened, that happened, this happens. And they give you the most simplest answers, and you think, "Can you give me a different one? Just don't give me the Dhamma, just give me a different answer. How do I do this?" He probably asks the same thing. But Sariputta Maharatan Mahanse says the same thing. All he did was in one life a very trivial, small thing. Small thing to a big person, regardless, that's beside the point. He didn't know. But that's his vipaka. So whenever you feel that, you know, other people are not being mean, rude, or you know, they are talking behind my back, remember him. You know, remember, you know, he became an arahant the last time. So when all this happened, he was still a person. Most likely, still not even an anagami, still a sotapan. Maybe before he was sotapan. Maybe he still was new to Dhamma, but yet this happened. I wouldn't be surprised if in a story it says that, you know, he comes back crying. However, that didn't stop him, did it? Even though all of that happened, he listened to his teacher, followed exactly what his teacher said, and therefore, before he passed away, he became an arahant. So whenever you feel that, you know, people are being really, you know, are telling me off for no reason, or, you know, people are not giving me the things I need or whatnot, remember the great Arahant. I mean, Lakunti Bad Maharatan Nuanse was told off for what? Was being ridiculed and scolded for what? For something he can't control. He was short. So people asked him, why are you short? He can't control it. But yeah, people do it. So this is the thing, you know. We have to, you know, use these. We're so fortunate to be surrounded by such noble association. We're so fortunate to be surrounded by so many great people and great stories that we can put it into our lives. We can put it into our lives and use it whenever we need it. It's like, you know, any situation, you have a solution. In every situation, you have a solution. You know, your teachers are such amazing people. They give you solutions for any situation. The Dhamma is universal. The other day, I was talking to a child, and you know, the child was telling me, you know, every single time, you know, this person scolds me. Right? My teacher scolds me. I haven't done anything, but the teacher scolds me. Now I asked him, do you want a temporary solution or a permanent solution? Because a solution can be either temporary or permanent. A temporary solution means today, you're not going to be scolded, but tomorrow, you'll be scolded. Today, you might not be scolded, but tomorrow, you know, another person can scold. Or you can find a permanent solution where scolding does not affect. I mean, that's exactly what we've been doing our entire life. Finding this temporary solution. Whenever we've had stress, we found ways to cope with it. Whenever we were angry, found ways to cope with anger. Where on earth did we ever think, you know, I'm angry, how can I get rid of it? Where do we think that, you know, today I feel really stressed. How do I get rid of it? No, we think of how can I cope with it? Because we didn't know that it was something you can get rid of. But with the Buddha's Dhamma, you know that everything is what? Cause and effect. Everything is a process. That means you know there's a reason why something happens. Therefore, you know, getting rid of the causes will get rid of the effect. Therefore, you know, if I feel stressed, I can get rid of it. So ask yourselves, do you want the permanent solution or temporary solution? Temporary solution is very easy. Anyone knows that. Someone, you don't like being with a certain person. What's a temporary solution? Don't be with them. Try to avoid. But the permanent one? Be with them. But get rid of hindrance. So you choose. Do you want the temporary solution or the permanent one? Technically, you always have a choice. Now that most of you, or if not all of you, have a good understanding of the Dhamma, you always have a choice. Temporary or permanent. temporary or permanent. You always have a solution. Always have a choice. Whenever a problem occurs, you have 5 seconds to make that decision. You have 5 seconds. Which way do you want to go? Temporary or permanent? For as long as you're aware, you can always take the permanent solution. Something happens, you find the reason why. Why do I feel such a thing? I mean, we're very good at this. We're very good at not looking at why we feel what we're feeling. Instead, we think about, you know, what caused what I'm feeling? And then trying to get rid of what actually caused it, then the core of it. Someone makes you angry, what do? You remove yourself from the person. Not that you get rid of the core reason why. Again, temporary solution. Instead, what should you be doing? Looking at, why do I feel angry? Not with this person, but why do I feel angry? What is the cause of anger? No matter what, without a Kalyan Mitra, without noble association, you'll never be able to actually pinpoint it. But once you have Kalyan Mitras, you have the Dhamma, you have the teachings of the Buddha, therefore you can pinpoint it and you can say, this is why. It is ignorance that leads to attachment. It's that attachment that gives rise to vexation, gives rise to insanity, gives rise to jati. This is why. So instead of me trying to find a way to avoid this person, why not try to get rid of ignorance? Technically, if you truly understand this, you go looking for situations that makes you what? Angry. You go looking for people who make you what? Annoyed. You go looking for people who stress you out. Because you know it's not them. You know it can't be them. So you know that I have to look for what? The real reason. Ignorance. But we always have the tendency, I don't like this person, so I'm going to try to escape, try to remove. I don't like that person, I'm going to, you know, find a way or ask my head and change my position. You know, I can't work with her. Let me ask if I can change. You know, I don't like doing this job. You know, I don't like sweeping the Dhamma hall. I wonder if I can find a way to clean the Buddha Mandira. The Buddha shrine. Actually, you should be looking for jobs that you don't like. Because there's not the problem. The problem's with your own mind. Every time you think, don't like this, you should have the next thing, next thought should be, well, that's ignorance. Think about this, right? Our mind has a tendency to contemplate at what moment. Especially at what moment does our mind like to contemplate? When you're happy and joyful and, you know, experiencing a ton of pleasure? No, our mind loves to contemplate when? When you're down and something bad has happened, you felt angry or you feel stressed, or now you feel the need to what? To contemplate. Now, that's not saying you shouldn't contemplate when you're happy, you should. But, you know, use that. You know, every day I'm in the kitchen, you know, cutting the salad, the melon. I want to change my job. If you feel so, you know, that's the best thing. Why? What should you be feeling? I feel so annoyed. Not because of the melon, because of what? Because of ignorance and because of jati. They say variety is the spice of life. Yes. It makes the next morning very difficult. Variety is a spice, it's not the spice of life. Variety gives you different ways to not feel, you know, not feel, basically. That's why, you know, one of the things that humanity finds really difficult to do is being consistent. We find a way to consistently change. Apart from that, we find it very difficult to be consistent, to do the same thing over and over again. We find ways to make it easier. We find ways to make it, you know, less burdensome. But we find ways to change it. Because we can become really bored very quickly. I mean, when we couldn't, you know, when you don't want to go shopping, what do? You order online. You know, back then, you know, if you order something online, right, it takes probably about a month to come. Then they brought it down and said, you know, we'll make it easier for you. We'll give you 7 days. Give us 7 days and we'll deliver it. Nah, and it's got to a point where, you know, you can say that, you know, give me a day. I'll deliver it in 1 day. Because we can't do something consistently. We want to change. Because we don't like feeling this vexatious feeling, because that's not what we like. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if there'll be a day that, you know, you can order something and they'll be say, we'll deliver it to you in 6 hours. And technically, you know, there will be a day sometime in the future where you order something and they'll say, you know, we'll deliver it to you in an hour. Give us an hour. And in an hour, a drone comes over you and drops the package in front of your door. Who knows? Why is that? Because we can't do things consistently. You know, I have to go shopping today. You know, I have to take a week of shopping today. Right, you know, I'm going to have to carry all these heavy bags with me. I have to travel to this place, that place, because these are the cheapest places and whatnot. And you're now going through a lot of burden. Actually, that's one of the best times you can contemplate. Why do I feel stressed? Why do I feel burdened? Well, if only I only have this moment, why do I think about, you know, the time I'm going to be at home, sitting down, relaxing? Why do I think about that? When you only have this moment. I mean, only those who really think about this can actually feel the amount of times we live in the future. Always thinking about, you know, what's the future going to be like? What am I going to do in the future? I mean, simply think about it, right? Even when you have a headache, you're still thinking about the future. Future of what? How long will my headache last? So, you know, because remember, a mind will only arise at one moment, right? A mind can only arise at a single moment. So if a mind arose, say today morning, of a headache, and then, you know, you're busy with something else, and then after, you know, you come to the monastery, you enter the gate and you sit down, and then again, the mind arose saying that, you know, you have a headache. And then right now, when we talk about headaches, you remember now you have a headache. What you do is you connect these three things and said, I've had a headache since the morning. And then, I can't wait for this headache to go. When is that going to happen? In the future. And because we predict that it's going to go in the future, what do? You know, still headache. You know, but the way this is going, my headache is now going to go, it's going to increase and it's going to be excruciating. You know, I'm going to have to take a paracetamol. Again, you're projecting in the future. What's your plan after the alms? I'm gonna find this seat. You know, this is the best seat to the place. I'm gonna book the seat and then, you know, go to this place and, you know, see if I can take a 5 minutes nap before Guru Andhra's sermon starts. Still, you know, Plans are, is not the problem. You feel that I'm going to find a, I'm going to book this seat, and then I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and you're living in the future. Technically, before you even consume a meal, you've already eaten it. You serve a plate, right? You serve alms. Before you even, you know, pratyaksha, you've already eaten it. This dal curry looks a bit spicy. Does the texture of the rice doesn't seem so right? No, it's not cooked properly. You have no idea. You haven't eaten it yet, but yet you've already eaten it. Before you pratyaksha, you've already eaten it. You already know where you're going to start. Before you eat, you already know where you're going to start. You already know where you're going to end. I'm going to start in this corner and then in that corner. Because we live where? We live, predicting what's going to happen. Because you don't realize that this is only, the mind arises at this moment. You completely forget that. The moment you get you serve yourself, you already know, I think that this soy is a bit spicy, and you have no clue. No clue. But you think. I mean, think about it like this, right? We're currently in the durian season. Yes. Now, I can't say durian smells good or smells bad because different people will have different opinions, right? Because if it's a strong smell, people who like it love the smell. People who don't like it don't like the smell. Now, already, when you smell it, you already predict what it's going to taste like. When you smell, let's take another fruit. When you take a mango and you can smell it, you can already imagine what it tastes like. Why? Because when you smell it, you already predict. You've already eaten the mango. You've already eaten it. That's why you can say that, this mango smells sweet. I mean, the mango smells. But the smelling sweetness, that comes from where? Your prediction. The other day, when I was in the Noble Hearts, for I think one of their meals, they had, and as a dessert, they had rambutan. Now, rambutan is very interesting, because sometimes you don't know whether it's a good rambutan or a bad rambutan, or it's rotten or not. So they'll look at it and say, this is going to be a really one, really good one. They open it, find it's rotten. But they've already eaten it. When they see it, they've already eaten it. When they smell it, they've already eaten it. I remember back at home, whenever my mother was cooking, I could tell you exactly what it tastes like before, it's even made. I'll go to Amma and go like, Amma, it smells really spicy today. Smelling the spices is okay, but you predict that it's going to be like this. I mean, that's what shops do, right? They give off different scents, therefore you think differently. For example, in certain clothes shops, they'll give certain smells for you. So, for example, if they're targeting, the summer collection, they'll give very flowery smells. Therefore, you think, oh, actually, this dress reminds me of this flower, and you have a tendency to buy it. Whereas a bakery, I mean, every morning the bakery makes bread, not just because they have to make bread, for the smell. You smell the smell, you remember what it tastes like. You predict what the bread's going to taste like. And therefore you take it. Again, we live in the future. So come back to durian. Whenever you smell durian, don't you think, oh, will you have durian for alms today? Oh, boo. Durian. I remember the first time I was given durian. And that was... I was at a high ordination ceremony of some of our monks, and I wasn't in the ceremony. I was helping out, and we had to go to Malwatte, and they had, you know, this durian. And trust me, if you have never had durian, it's a very strong smell, and it's a very, very strong smell. Don't like. And so they gave it to me, and I smelled it, and I've already made my judgment that's bad. But, you know, I can't say no to an opportunity. So I was like, okay, I'll have a small amount. And so the Nayakan was like, okay, just take a small bit. So it's okay. Had a small bit, didn't like it, because already I've made the projection. I've already made my mind up. It doesn't taste good. And I remember going to the ceremony, and in the middle of the ceremony, my stomach wasn't good. Now, I've made the connection what? My stomach's not good because of what I've eaten. What's the one thing I ate that wasn't right? Durian. From that day onwards, durian, stomachache, can't eat. Durian, stomachache. And I remember it was funny because one of the Nayakahandras of that temple said, oh, don't worry, Abhihandra, you have it another 3 to 4 times and you'll be okay. Like, no, I get stomach aches, can't eat it. Because you now, because of that information, you project and you think, okay, whenever I have this, this is what's going to happen. Now, that doesn't mean if you have allergies, you should have the things you're allergic to. That's besides the point. I mean, you automatically make a mental projection of what it is, what it tastes like, what's going to happen afterwards. Now, you can say that's experience. I agree, it is experience. But you can only taste something when it contacts your tongue. You can't taste without it contacting your tongue. You can't mentally taste. You can mentally imagine. But we enjoy this mental imagination. We enjoy this mental imagination. So that day onwards, I remember I'll be like, whenever durian season comes, I'll be like, you know, I can't have durian. Until I realize, you know, it's just a taste. Because you hear stories of people who, at the beginning, they hate durian, but then once they get given the dushti, then durian is something they cannot live without. Again, why is that? It's not because of anything, but because of how the mind works. See, all we have to do is understand the mind. All you have to do is every single moment try to understand the mind. You know, the mind is part and parcel of us, the way we think, the way we perceive, the way we do things. But we never know why the mind, how the mind works. And so whenever it comes up with things that we don't like, what happens is we start to feel, how can I cope with this? Now, how can I get rid? Like, for example, you know, whenever you're at, say, at home, and something is not working right, we know how to fix it. And back then, like some time ago, we talked about the washing machine. Whenever you get a new washing machine, and it's giving you random error codes, what do you do? You know, you don't find a way to keep the error codes, but still wash your clothes. No, you find the way to get rid of this error code. How? Either by reading a manual, either by asking someone who knows about it, or asking Google. But you won't. Whenever you get an error code with something technical, you find the way to get rid of the error code. But when our mind gives an error code, we decide, how can I cope with this? How can I keep it? How can I stay, how can I, you know, be sad and cope with it. And cope and reduce it, but still have it. Instead of finding out, why do I have this error code? Why am I feeling stressed? Because, ladies and gentlemen, remember, this, our entire purpose is the end goal of being happy. If that is so, that means everything, every time that we feel stressed, we feel angry, we feel frustrated, that's an error. Error of the mind. So what should we be doing? Finding out, why is there an error? Where does the error come from? Once you understand the error and where it comes from, you automatically know the solution. The solution becomes very apparent to you the moment you understand. And that's the thing. All we have to do is understand. All we have to do is understand the mind. Understand the mind is equal to understanding the nature of nature. And the moment that happens, all of these problems that we have start to degrade, start to disappear. It's almost like, you know, imagine that there's a child, right, who looks in the moon and asks his mother, you know, Mom, where, like, I want the moon. Now, what can the mother do? The mother can't do anything. So every night he'll look at the moon, and every morning, you know, when the moon is gone, the small child starts crying. You know, as days go on, you know, the full moon becomes a crescent, and then there's no moon time. Where there's a night sky, there's no moon. The boy starts crying. Every time it starts to reduce, the boy starts crying. Every time this the moon, every night when the moon increases, the boy is really happy. When it's a full moon, the boy is really happy. What should the purpose, or what should the parent do? What should the mother do? Find a way to stick a moon in the boy's bedroom? So he can look at the moon every night? No, explain that. What is the moon? The moon is something that comes up every night. The moon is something that changes every day. Every month we've got a full moon, and then we have a no moon. Because once the boy understands the process of what the moon is, will the boy ever start crying when he sees a no moon? No, the boy will understand. Oh, this is a time where, you know, the light isn't hitting the moon, therefore I can't see it. Again, all we have to show ourselves is the nature of nature, and problems start to disappear. Problems disappear. So, I want to take this onto a specific part. Because, when you look around the world, the one thing that, you know, people really know, a necessity of life is what? What is necessary for life? Food. I mean, can we live without food? Food is one of the most important things that we all have. I agree. Then if you look at other necessities, is water, clothes, medicine, shelter, as well as, they say that one of the most basic necessities of life is love. Now, I want to look at this, to examine together what that is. Why is it a necessity? And how it works. Because they say, you know, in this world, more, you know, we need love and appreciation more than we need bread, they say. But then we have to actually ask ourselves, then what is that? What is love? And why is it a basic need? For there to be the feeling of love, what does there have to be? For there to be the feeling of love, what does it have to be? Two what? Separate? Two separate things. So two separate people. Whether it's a mother loves son, mother loves daughter, husband loves wife, boy loves girl. Someone loves friends. I love chocolate. She loves music. There always has to be two things. I mean, in English, we always have what? A subject and an object. Every sentence has to have a subject and an object plus a verb. Now this concept of love is very interesting because there always has to be two people involved. However, or two people, two separate things involved. So very simply, if we took this one sentence, already we see three different things. What do we see? I love you. Now the question is, what is love? What is love? And why does this happen? First of all, let's break it down, right? Break it down to its three components. One, two, and three. These are the three components of this one sentence. First of all, let's take one of them. Let's take I. Now, who is I? Who is I? Now, because we all know that I is what? Is what? Who are you? I am a mind and body. What about you? Who are you? Or who? That's the same thing, isn't it? I and you are both the same. Also what? Also mind and body. Now this is very interesting because if we asked what is love? Love is an attachment that's made, right? Definition of love is an attachment that's made between two things. Right. If it's I and you, it's an attachment between I and you, not the letters, of course, the people. Because you can also say I love myself. Still, that's two separate things. I love myself. Who is myself? Because when you say that, don't you feel that I and myself are two different things? Because to love something, you have to have two separate things. Now the question is, are they separate? Are they separate? The question is, are the mind and body two separate things for two separate people? This is the thing. The moment you understand the nature of nature, you understand what true love is actually. Because for there to be a body, right? Let's say, you know, person A says to person B, I love you. So person A could be a mother, a father, a husband, a wife, you know, it could be anyone, but the same. But you know, it's very, very difficult to accept it. You know, is it the same? The attachment between a mother and their child and husband and wife, is the attachment the same? Does your mind have different sort of attachments? No, attachment is the same for anything. Attachment is the same for anything. The attachment you have between yourself and someone else, and attachment you have between yourself and chocolate, technically are the same attachment, however, with different intensity. The attachment you have between you and, you know, your partner is an attachment that is stronger than what you have with chocolate. However, this can change. Someone who's a chocoholic may love what? Chocolate more than they love their spouse. So if the spouse wants to be loved, what do? Come home with what? Chocolate. So, the difference between, love is equal. There is no certain loves that your mind has. Mind will have just attachment. Technically, the attachment you have to chocolate and the attachment you have to your child is the same attachment. But we don't like thinking like that. Imagine you start thinking that the attachment that I have to my child is the same attachment I have to my to chocolate. You almost feel that it's wrong. It's weird. It can't be. There has to be some, you know, the love of my child is a different sort of love. Actually, same thing. The love I have to my spouse and love I have to chocolate, it's different. The mind only can perceive what? What can the mind perceive? Sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, and thoughts. Nothing more, nothing less. Whether the mind is associating a person, it also feels what? Also perceives what? Sight, sound, smells, taste, touch. Whether it's you know, associating, say, a piece of chocolate, it's also what? Sight, sound, smells, taste, touch. Technically, when you eat chocolate, in your world, the only thing apparent in your world is what? The only thing in your world is what? Chocolate and spouse? Or just chocolate? Because once you perceive one thing, you can only perceive one thing at one time. So when you taste chocolate, in your world, there's only what? The taste of chocolate. But then when you see your child, now you perceive what? Child. But you can never perceive, your world can never have those two things at the same time. Because your world is created at this moment. That's why, you know, if I drew something here, and then changed it, and then drew something here, you can't see it. It's a very nice drawing, right? It's like Mona Lisa, and you can't see it, right? What I drew here and here, you know, in your world right now, only this amazing drawing is there. This one is now no longer. You can use your memory and you say, you know, there used to be something here. But in your world, you only have this. Like, technically, you don't know, but you know, Guru Hamda could be behind you. You know, I don't know, the president or the prime minister could be right behind you. Unless you turn around, you have no idea, because that's not your world. Because your world, you can only perceive one thing at one time. So, you know, when you are eating chocolate, in your world, you only have what? And therefore, you can only make attachment to what? But then when you see, you know, your best friend, now in your world, you only can see what? Therefore, you can only make attachment to what? So what's the difference between your attachment to your friend and the attachment you have to chocolate? Exactly the same. Now, this is not trying to, you know, put down this idea or this, you know, because, you know, in society, we've given, you know, love towards people such a great value. But the mind can't identify. We don't have a seventh sense to identify living beings. No, our senses can only sense what? Sight, sound, smells, taste, touch. So there's no two different likes, there's no two different attachments. The attachment of love and the attachment of, you know, liking something. Exactly the same. But in society, we've given love such a high value that, you know, seeing it compared with, you know, inanimate objects is not right. Feels weird. But for the mind, love is love. Attachment is attachment. So, I and you. What is the difference between I and you? Let's take the body. Let's simply just take the body. What is the difference between I and you when it comes to the body? The body is made from what? Now we've all heard about this. The body is made from organ systems, right? Organ systems are made from organs. Organs are made from what? Tissues. Tissues are made from what? Cells. Cells, or a bunch of cells. Cells are made from what? And go back to, you know, grade 7, year 8, year 9, you know, science. So what are cells made from? Proteins. What are proteins made from? Amino acids. Amino acids, what are they made from? Atoms. What are atoms made from? Protons, neutrons, electrons. And you can break that down further and further and further. But even if you just took, if you were to understand it at a very, like, you know, forget looking at protons, electrons, and neutrons. But, you know, if you just took it as proteins. Proteins are pretty much what? The same between you and I. The amino acids are the same between you and I. That's why you could, you know, I mean, if you and I are two completely different things, right? Two completely different things. If I ever need blood, how can I take someone else's? And how can my body just accept it? So for example, if you're blood type O, right? You are a universal donor. You can give your blood to anyone. You can give your blood to anyone. If it's my blood, and if it's special to me, how can it work in your body? Because blood isn't separate here. Technically, your body doesn't know that, you know, this is my blood, this is your blood. All it has is, you know, it has a way to detect if it's something that's foreign. But if we are able to, you know, change that, your body doesn't know. Because all that there is to detect whether this is part of your body or not is a protein. Change the protein and the body just accepts it. That's why, you know, you get things like transplants. Now, it's okay to think, you know, humans and human, that's okay. You know, you can have human transplant, right? If you need a kidney, then, you know, you can get a kidney transplant. But technically, you can get a transplant of an animal. For example, people with diabetes, they have to get insulin. Where do they get insulin from? Do you think that people go around, you know, with a needle, stabbing people and extracting people's insulin? Do they have a farm of people just to extract insulin? No, they have what? They use bacteria. All they do is insert the genetic code to bacteria, and bacteria multiplies and produces what? Insulin. So if you get an insulin shot, you're taking bacteria? Is that how it works? No, because your body needs insulin. Insulin is created by bacteria, but insulin is what? It's a protein. It's a chemical signal. Whether it's created by yourself or whether it's created by, you know, a bacteria, it still works. Because your body is made from proteins. Your body is made from amino acids. Amino acids is the same or difference between each and every one of us. I mean, think about it. Your DNA, all you have is four things. A, T, C, G. That's able to code this entire magnificent body. So bodies are the same. Bodies are exactly the same. You know, as you grow older, you know, we used to have really lovely, beautiful hair. Now you grow older, you know, you're getting gray hair. What is gray hair? It's just hair that doesn't have the pigment. Again, it's a protein. So what's the difference between color, you know, lush, pure, you know, perfect hair and gray hair? What's the difference? The only thing difference is, you know, a difference in a protein. That doesn't give rise to color. It doesn't give rise to a protein that can help you perceive the color. That's it. So what's the difference between the body, between I and you? So person A says this to person B. The difference between body of person A and person B is the exact same. Body-wise. Then you have the mind. What is the difference between the mind of person A and person B? How do our minds differ? What is the mind? The mind is an energy. The mind is an energy that arises for one purpose and one purpose alone. And that purpose is what? To perceive. To know and to find out. That's the entire purpose of the mind. Nothing else. To perceive. And the perception that you have varies according to what? According to the causes. For example, what is this? What is this? The moment you look at this, you have a perception. What do you perceive? A what? A pen? But did you know? This is not just a pen. This is a whiteboard pen. You know, it's not just a whiteboard pen. It's from a specific brand. You know, it's not just a specific brand. It's color blue. Now, all these are just perceptions. Now, you perceiving this and I'm perceiving this. What is the difference between our perceptions? You have heat energy here and you have heat energy here. What is the difference between these heat energy? You know, imagine I had a battery. You know, a clock. If we had a clock, you know, clock works on those small, those AA batteries. If I had an AA batteries, and do you remember those 9-volt batteries? Those big chunky ones, right? And I had a 9-volt battery. What is the difference between the electrical energy between these two? Does the 9-volt one has a 9-volt, has a different sort of electricity? Or, you know, I take a battery and I take a plug socket. What is the difference between the electrical energy itself, not whether it's AC or DC, right? The electrical energy itself, what is the difference? Energy is energy. There's no difference of electrical energy. This mic doesn't care whether it's powered by a battery or whether it's powered by, you know, the electric board. It doesn't matter, because energy is energy. Now, the mind is exactly the same. The mind works on this energy. The mind is energy. So which energy is better? Which energy is different? Heat energy or heat energy? Light energy or light energy? Which energy is better? Which energy is greater? Which one? They're both the what? They're both the same. Now, the problem is, when we don't see that I and you are the same, then and only then, once you have a subject and an object, can there be a verb. A verb that is dependent. Isn't love dependent? You know how they say, you know, parents' love is equal to all their children. A parent's love is equal to all their children. Now, as we are all children, right? We all used to be children one day or another. Is that true? If you had siblings, is that true? Is your parents' love equal amongst every sibling? No. There's always, we call it favoritism. There's always some sort of favoritism. There's always one child that, one parent loves better. Like a father normally loves their daughter more than love their son, and a mother will love the son more than love the daughter. So, do parents love equally? Now, what is the difference that causes? What causes the difference between the love? Something. There'll be something. Because it's always conditioned. If you think about it, love is always conditioned. There's always a reason that causes what? Your love to change. For example, if you like to have a smart child, that means if your child is smart, you have now more love than a child that's not so smart. If you love, if you think about it, right? Not just child, you can put anything here. Between two people, it's always something conditioning. That's why you can get angry with the person. If you love something, right, and only love the thing, you can never be sick of it. But aren't you sick of things that you love? If not, try to have lots of it. If you love chocolate, try to have lots of it. So if you're telling me that you never get sick of the things that you love, then why do you have arguments with your spouse? Why do you have you know, those bitter conversations between, you know, partners? If love is always there, and if love is equal, and if love is permanent, then it should always be there regardless. However, it's always conditioned. Love is conditioned. There are things that condition it. When those conditions change, the amount of love that you feel will now what? That's why we have days called Valentine's. That's why we have days called Mother's Day, Father's Day. What is that for? To give us days that we can show that we love the person better. To give them a reason to keep loving us. Kind of. Because love is conditioned. Because what is love? Love is a void. Love is a void. It's a void in the reason that when I love, it creates a massive void that someone or something has to fill. For example, you know, as you grow older, you feel, you know, there's something that a lot of people find, a lot of people need. As they grow older, they need someone to protect them, to be with them through sickness and health. And therefore, there's a void. Anyone who could fill this void, or who says they can fill the void, that happens. For example, you have a void. I need, you know, chocolate is what makes me happy. The void opens. Now you're looking, now this black hole is looking for what? Something to fill it. And whenever chocolate is present, the void feels full. And then the statement comes, I love chocolate. When the question arises, I like the sight of a person. Now, when the person comes and fills this, or when this void feels feels as though it's filled with this person, now it's I love person. Love is a void. A void that is continuously filled. The more, because this void isn't, you can't fill this void. You can never fill this void. This void is unfillable. It's like a black hole. The more you feed it, the more you have to feed it. For example, we're not satisfied with a small piece of chocolate. We are not satisfied with, you know, one slice of a small slice of pizza. We're not satisfied with, you know, with a 2 minutes TV show. The void needs to be filled. Therefore, more needs to come in. It needs to have more and more and more. This void feels as though it's being full, but it's never filled. It's like a bucket that has a hole in it. The more you try to fill this bucket, the more, you know, the water comes out and the bucket's empty, the same way it started. Because this is always conditioned. There are reasons behind this love. There are reasons behind this love. There are things that condition it. This is what love is, you know. Now, I'm not saying that love is horrible. I'm not saying that, because if you think about it, right? If you think about this, love is selfish. Love is selfish. Because it's only if something is given to you, are you happy? For example, if I love chocolate, only if I receive chocolate, do I like the person? If that person was to give chocolate to someone else, will I love that person? No, it has to be, they have to do something for who? Me. They have to give something to who? Give something to? They have to provide for who? They have to provide for me. They can only smile with who? They can only laugh with who? No one else. It's only for me. That smile is mine. If you smile with someone else, no. That smile is mine. That laugh is mine. For me. And you're always looking at what can you give me? On the other side, the other person is also thinking what? What are you going to give me? When both of you decide that you're giving what you are expecting of each other, you make a deal and you think, okay, we're in a relationship. For example, if you say for example, take two friends. You can only be friends with the person who is there that helps you, who can give you things that you need. If your friend decides not to talk with you, how long will this friendship last? You are best friends and the friend decides, from day on, I'm not talking to my friend. How long will friendship last? Cannot last. Because why? That's conditioned. That love is conditioned. If you talk with me and I talk with you, can we be friends? Yes. If you give me chocolate, I'll give you flowers. Can we be friends? Yes. If you help me and I help you, can we be friends? Yes. That's what love is. But that's not what true love is. What is true love? True love is a love that has no subject, that has no object. That is just a what? Just a verb. True love is when you get rid of I and you. A love that is not conditioned. When you yourself become love. When love isn't conditioned, that's what true love is. Or else you're just loving yourself. If I and you is there, you actually don't love you, you love I. You love what you is giving I. But once you get rid of the subject and object, that's true love. Because now you are, now you are love and love is you. You no longer just love your child. You love what? Anyone. You no longer just help your people. You help who? Anyone. You become love itself. All you have to do is get rid of I and you, the subject and object. Then you become love itself. Now there is no condition. Whatever you do, I don't care. Whatever you give me, I don't care. I will love you regardless. I will care for you regardless. What you give me, I don't care. You give me your flowers, that's okay. You give me chocolate, that's okay. You start shouting at me, that's okay. You start, you know, screaming at me, that's okay. Do you give me food? That's okay. You don't give me food. That's okay. I will love you regardless. That is true love. When your love isn't conditioned, that is true love. This is unconditional love. That can only be given by someone who has got rid of the subject and object. Because if you love chocolate, you cannot love, you know. So for example, normally people who love something that's sweet cannot handle things that are bitter. Because if you like sweet, everything else is what? There's something that you don't like. If you like something, there's always something you don't like. For example, if you like clean, you don't like messy. If you like messy, you don't like what? Clean. If you like black, you don't like white. If you like white, you don't like black. If there's something that you like, if there's something that you love, if there's something that you like and there's something that you love, then there are something that you don't like. There's something that you hate. If there is something that you love, there's always hatred. So to get rid of hatred, you have to get rid of what? Your love for something. Not love. Your love for something. You have to become love. Not I love you, but love. Because you can't say love you or I love. Those are both half sentences. Can you say love you? Even if you were to tell someone love you, you're still insinuating what? That I am there. But if I say I love, the next question you ask is what? But just love? That's true love. And that can only be given by someone who's got rid of the subject and object. Because love itself isn't the void. It's when I love. That is a void. If there is a void, you should avoid. But love itself is what? You see, love is pure. I love is defiled. Love is pure. And the Buddha himself talks about what? Love. Metta, Karuna, Mudita, Upeksha. These are all four different types of what? Love. Upeksha is also what? Love. Metta, Karuna, Mudita, Upeksha. They're all different types of love. The Buddha talks about love. This is a pure love. Not dependent on what the other person does. This can only be done by someone who's got rid of I and you, who understands that I and you are both the same. That I and you are both the same. I and chocolate are both the same. That doesn't mean that you are chocolate and chocolate is you. But you realize there's no difference between those. You realize that no, these are just different forms. See, you know those people who say that they love the world. Do they? Do we love the world? We love the world until or unless conditioned. Conditioned. But once love happens, now, only then can you love the world? Only then can you truly understand the world. Because when you love, you have no friends, you have no enemies. Because everyone is loved. because everyone is loved. You've lost your friends. You've lost your enemies. There's no boundary that separates you from, you know, your friends from enemies, because there's just minds. Because, you know, if you have friends, there are, you know, if you see, if there is friends, what else do you have then? In the set of people, you have friends, and then you have what? Anyone who is not a friend is what? A stranger. Anyone who you know and is not a stranger is what? Someone you don't like. But getting rid of this circle itself gets rid of this circle. And you're left with what? People. When you have no friends, you have no enemies. You know, I mean, you can take that and you can say, well, I want to have lots of friends. Now, I'm talking about if you have no friends, specific people that you like and you associate, you have no enemies. Because you love everyone. Whether they are the richest man or woman alive, whether they are the most nicest of people, or whether they're horrible human beings. You can love them, but you can love them regardless. Just think about the mindset of an Arjuna. They find out that, you know, this person has murdered their entire family. What does the Arjuna feel? What changes in their love? Someone, you know, someone starts, we say, let's say, the Arjuna Master can see someone's robbing their parents. What does the Arjuna Master feel? Difference in what? Do they feel that they start to hate the person? Their love does not change. They love both. His or her parents, and also the enemy or the person who's thieving, the thief as well. Because he understands. They understand what? They have no what? Subject. There is no what? Object here. We are all one of the same. One world, one family, right? That's a beautiful thing to think about. It's one world, one family. We are all part of a single family. You know, we're all humans. But yet, in this massive set of humans, we have people that we like, and we have people that we don't like. But we are one whole world. So love. Love and love and love. Love who though? Love everyone regardless. Love your child. And love children. Love not just your pet, but love animals. Love and love and love. And just understand that there is no one on both sides. I and you. There is no one to love, because you are what? Love. You are what? You are love. So what is love? What is true love? True unconditional love. What is that? This. To find the way to truly love people. Once you truly love people, that's the day that you can finally say that, you know what, today, that's the day you can say, today, I'm truly happy. Because true love is equal to true happiness. Because this love cannot be taken away. This love cannot be taken away. This love cannot be, you know, removed, changed. For as long as your mind has energy, that love will still will continue to be there. So love. Okay, I'm also aware of the time as well. So, what we have to do, all we have to do, is understand subject and object. That's it. Getting rid of the subject and object, that's all we have to do. And that's when you can truly love. That's when you can truly love. So I also want to give the reminder that on the 16th this month, we have an ordination ceremony. We have very lucky to be able to be part and parcel of this ordination ceremony. As in, you know, this ordination ceremonies, although we have it so often at the monastery, right? Every 3 months, 4 months, we get an ordination ceremony. Almost, I think, on average, 3 times a year? Yeah? But just remember, in your entire journey through your sansara, you know, ordination ceremonies are few and far between. Now, these are people, you know, who have stayed and lived in the monastery for an entire year, saying that, you know, all I want is Nibbana, nothing else. The Buddha preaches in Pali, it's called Nissa, right? And in this Nissa, he talks about the four things that you can have as a monk. He said, you know, for the four basic requisites, he says, for chivara, what you are almost heir to, or what you inherit, is chivara made from, or pansakula chivaras. Anything else, it's a privilege. So it's something that, you know, you have for Nibbana. Then, you know, for alms, you can go begging for alms. You do that for what? Nibbana. For shelter? No. A shelter where, you know, your two knees don't get wet. Whether that's under a tree or in a kuti. For as long as that's there, this is what you can inherit. And finally, for medicine, you know, bhutamaja besajya. These are the four things that you can have for your Nibbana. Everything else, take it in order for Nibbana. So he said, he talks about, you know, how important it is for us to use the four requisites. I mean, something that you all should be, all should also think about is, you know, these four requisites: food, shelter, clothes, and medicine. Understanding why you take it. So in the Buddha's, in the Vinaya, right, in the Buddha's discipline, in the Sasana's discipline, a Haudai monk has four things that he must not do. The Buddha says, if you can ever put a fifth one, it would be not using the four requisites, without understanding why you use it. So as you're consuming food, ask yourself, why am I doing it? Why am I consuming this? For what reason? The reason should be what? For Nibbana. Why am I wearing clothes? These clothes. I mean, you know, all of you, you know, you're wearing white. I mean, with some of you are wearing a patkar. That's what you wear. For anagarikas, anagarikas, asila shravikas, shravikas. I mean, this is your daily wear. Why do you wear it? For what purpose do you wear it? Ask yourself that. When you take a medicine, ask yourself, why am I taking this medicine? Because if not, what you're doing is you're feeding what? You're feeding your ignorance. You're feeding your defilements. And once they grow, they can take root. Because once you get used to it, once you don't realize why you're taking what you're taking, you know, the Buddha says, so this is not just about, you know, just monkhood. It's about the sasana. If you take your life lightly, this is, you can almost say this is the most fertile land to grow defilements. If you take your life as a sthita shravaka shravika, as an anagarika anagarika, as a monk, as a devotee, lightly, if you take the life of the Dhamma lightly, this is the best place to grow massive trees of defilements. So be careful. Be careful. Use the four requisites. Use the four requisites. Being mindful of why you use it. Why am I taking these four? Why do I have clothes? Why do I eat arms? Why am I under this shelter? I mean, we have to always appreciate that, you know, the people who have helped make this. You know, this building was made brick by brick by someone. And it's because of that someone are we able to, you know, sit down in this building, not scared of, or not being like burdened by the sun, not being wet. Like, we don't even feel the breeze, right? The coldness anymore. Because we're protected. So, you know, brick by brick, someone has helped make this. And every time we use an area, you know, at least think, you know, these people who helped it in any sort of way, may they attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Because they've given you the environment. You know, every time you enter a building, because, you know, that building is there for you to take the next step forward. Take a moment, you know, this is why in the merit transfer we talk about the people who help make monasteries. Especially, you know, this area. Whether they contributed with, you know, by making the place or just supplying a grain of sand. They've helped you. I mean, just think about everyone in your life who've helped you come to this moment, who've given you a glass of water when you were thirsty, when you were hungry, gave you some food. All those people contributed for you to come to this very moment. They deserve, you know, they are able to accept the merits that you accumulate. Just think about the amount of people who have sacrificed for you in your entire life. Your mother, your father, your siblings, if you have any. Your spouse, your children, all these people. Whether it's, you know, the person who cleans the street, the street cleaner, they also make a sacrifice, don't they? The person who swept this area, the person who made the decoration. All these people are heir for these merits. That's why we have this merit transfer. Take a moment to remember all these. Like, try to, you know, whenever you can, you know, think about the people who have helped you throughout your life. And transfer their merits. Transfer your merits to them. It tree if you can, right? Just take a day. From try to remember from the moment you were born to this very moment right now, all the people who've helped you. Like if you remember, you know, when you were in preschool, the person who your best friend there, if it wasn't for your best friend, would you have stayed in that preschool? Would you have learned what you've learned? Without that teacher? You know, these people are all there who've helped you. Like I said, you know, the people who've made these buildings. We're transfer merits. I mean, how lucky we are.
Yeah.
It's being grateful for what we have. Not being grateful, or not being ungrateful for what we could have. Being grateful for what we have. Transferring merits to all those people who helped. Do that. That's something that you have to do. Okay. Let's take a few moments to transfer merits and conclude today's session. Let's take a moment to transfer all the merits we've acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith, listening to Dharma, and engaging in various merit choice deeds today. So first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits to Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to a generation of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend Dhamma. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all chaplains or chapters, who dedicate their lives to the noble path and committed themselves to better divorce sentient beings. Let's not forget, among them will be the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side to thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let's also take a moment to transfer the merits to Guru Sahib Nanse, as well as the monks resident in the monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's take a moment to transfer the merits to all those who've Let's take a moment to transfer merits and special gratitude to those who made great efforts to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be that by translating sermons, sharing them out with others, inviting others to join them. May the power of the merits, if any have been born in the world of planes, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So let's take a moment to transfer the merits to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, and medicines, as well as those who pass on their know-hows and their well wishes. May the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees, and to all those who've helped us, supported us, assisted us in shape or form. By the power of the merits, may they be healed of any physical mental ailments, may they overcome any obstacles in spiritual progress, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. This also takes one chance of marriage to Devas, Brahmas, spirits, demons, Prayan Sakadeva, as well as numerous gods and deities who are committed to protecting and fulfill the Samudra Sasana. Let's not forget, among them will be our garden deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May the path of these merits, may they possibly know divine power and wisdom, may they abstain from meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. This also takes one chance of marriage to our ancestors, who have predeceased us, to all those who have been friends of family to us in this even long journey in sansara. So also take a moment to transfer merits to the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those lost lives in the war be the friend or foe, rejoice in the merits required today. It's also take a moment to transfer merits to all those who lost a life in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, floods, and pandemics, reminding ourselves among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this long journey in sansara. May the power of these merits, if any have been born in the mortal plane, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let's take a moment, let's check. made by the power of the merits we all acquired the other day. We have been witness the event of many hundreds of thousands of Arathanwansis, Arathmahinwansis in this blessed land. And finally, may the power of all the merits we acquired the other day, you and I and everyone who made this program a success become an Arathanwansi or Arathmahinwansi in this very life, in the era of the Gautama, Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessing of Chipuchan be with you. The members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnen midetnva Dvesha ginnen midetnva Moha ginnen midetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravetnva Raga gini niveva Dvesha gini niveva Moha gini niveva Nivansepa labeva Nivansepa labeva Nivansepa labeva Tunwange, Suisyananta Mahanganumilin, Siya Loka Siya Satyamama, Nimbhana Pamasukhin, Sukhita Vittah.